This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio. Sitting in for Libby, here is Tasha Kiridan.
Good afternoon, happy Monday, and welcome to Fight Back. I'm delighted to sit in for Libby today because we got a lot on the go. We'll be diving deep into potholes as the city completed yet another repair blitz this past weekend, and discussing pro-Palestinian protests that some say have crossed the line into promotion of hatred. But first, we're going to be talking teeth. As you heard on the news, Toronto Public Health announced today it will provide free dental care services for city-operated LTC home residents. Mayor Olivia Chow addressed the media at Bendale Acres long-term care home, and she said the initiative encourages residents to eat well, smile well, and age well. I want to know who wrote that line for her. It's a good one. It's a good one. And last week, Federal Health Minister Mark Holland changed the recommended process so dentists now do not have to enroll in the program. He said all dentists or patients will be able to seek reimbursement from the federal dental plan, but the proposed start date has now moved. It's no longer May. It might be July. Dentists think maybe August or September. And there are a lot of questions seniors have about the new program and how it will affect their care. What services will be covered? Will payments be complete or partial if you already have a plan? Can you keep that coverage? And the big one, too, will there be enough dentists to provide services, or will the new program meet longer wait times for care? Now, if you have a question or a comment on the new dental program, our Zoomer squad would love to hear it. So please give us a call, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740.
And now, time for the Zoomer Squad.
All right, to chew on all these issues, we are joined by our Zoomer Squad. On the phone, Lauren Bozeneff, President of Forum Research, and Bill Van Gorder, Chief Advocacy and Education Officer at CARP. And in studio with me, Anthony Quinn, Chief Community and Benefits Officer of CARP. Welcome, everyone.
Good to be with you, Tasha.
Good morning.
All right. So let's start. I'm going to start with you, Anthony, about the announcement today by Olivia Chow. What is your take, and how do you see this rolling out in long-term care homes in the city?
Well, long-term care homes in the city specifically, though, that's 10 homes. There are many more long-term care homes in Toronto, but we're talking today about the ones that are managed and run and funded by the City of Toronto. So that's 10 homes. About 2,600 beds. So this announcement is specific to that group, and it's terrific that they'll have access to mobile clinics in long-term care homes. There was a study recently that I read that said 1 in 8 seniors in long-term care homes are suffering from at least one form of distress with their teeth. So it's definitely a need that has to be fixed, but it's part of a larger program, the Ontario Seniors Dental Care Program. And that program has had a lot of hitches in it since it was announced and rolled out in 2019. The biggest part being that you have to qualify financially, so less than $22,000 for an individual or $37,000 for a family. And then you have to apply, prove yourself, get a card from the province, and then talk to your local public health authority and get in their very tight funnel for dental care. So that has been a program that's been fraught with problems for seniors in Ontario. The new federal program may address that. So that might solve those problems. But this investment in mobile clinics to get to long-term care residents makes a lot of sense. Glad to see it.
Well, I think a lot of people will be. And I know, Bill, that CARP was fighting for having mobile clinics in long-term care homes. So that's a win for CARP. So congratulations. That's great. But building on what Anthony just said, how is this going to mesh with the federal program? What's it going to look like?
And that's the whole question. And that's the question that CARP has been asking for months now, as none of these details are clear, because we know that the federal government Not only has it not reached any agreement with the dental associations, it hasn't even begun discussions with most of the provinces when it comes to how this is going to be implemented and who's going to pay for what. Ontario has a better plan than most of the other provinces for currently looking after seniors' dental issues. When the federal kicks in, does this mean that the Ontario plan will be able to back out and just let the feds pay for it all, or will they continue to pay provincially for their areas, and will there be a different type of plan in each province? And none of these are clear yet, and we don't know. We get bits and pieces of changes from the federal government from time to time. Even today, they are now talking about having thousands of dental professionals available to provide those services and willing to provide, but they're not giving the whole story. Because very few dentists, less than 15%, have agreed so far to provide the services. They have come to an agreement with the National Hygienists Association, so they can count those among their members. So the real question for them now is coming back to how many dentists are really going to provide these services.
Yeah, it is actually a big question that's unanswered, because I noticed in that the Conservative Party federally put the Liberals on the ropes and said there were only eight dentists, count them, enrolled in the program in New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island and Newfoundland out of 1,170. So the uptake hasn't been very strong, Lorne. Wondering what you're hearing as a researcher, as a pollster, from dentists and the public on how they see this program.
So the public always likes investment in healthcare, and this is another healthcare investment. So public always likes that, and that's always their number one or number two issue. And you know, the number one issue right now is affordability, and this also works in that. You know, it's free dental care. But you know, it's like the budget. Is it going to actually get carried out? And we've just been hearing from the others on the show that you know, there's not a lot of dentists enrolled, et cetera, et cetera. And the big question will be, is it actually going to be carried out, you know, in an effective way in terms of reaching a lot of people or not?
Yeah, this is, and will there be the service providers to do that? Give us a call if you've got some thoughts on the dental program, 416-360-0740, or toll free 1-866-740-4740. What are your thoughts on it? Are you worried? Maybe you have coverage, private coverage, and you're wondering how is that going to mesh with the plan, or other issues. Anything you would like to ask our Zoomer squad, give us a call. Anthony, let me ask you that question, because many people may say, well, I have coverage. Do we have any clear indication, but either provincially or municipally, how those people will be covered now?
No, we don't know that yet. In Toronto, there's about 500,000 people over age 65. So we're talking about a pretty big hunk of the population. And from what I've read, about 40% of seniors currently have some sort of dental insurance. Not full coverage, certainly, but depending on where they worked as a career, or if they've bought follow-up coverage after they've retired. So we've got close to 40% of people who are insured, but that 60% are waiting, and perhaps to their own detriment, if they're waiting for something to be covered and they're hoping that as of May, the promised coverage will be there, they're going to be suffering. And Bill has been advising our members not to wait. If you need dental care, you have to proceed right now. But if there are those who are waiting for that funding, it's not happening yet, and they could be suffering.
Yeah, Bill, what kind of issues do people have? What are the most common issues that seniors have with dental care that this plan might help them with?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question, because, you know, CARP has been advocating for dental services for seniors for years, especially in long-term care home and seniors facilities, because poor oral health is one of the reasons that so many people get other diseases and other problems, because they don't look after their teeth. And the problem we've had, and that's why the announcement announcement, at least of the Toronto-owned homes, is so positive today is because often these problems in people's mouths aren't found until they stop eating, and then somebody looks into their mouth and says, oh my gosh, look at the infection that is in there, look what's going on, because there's no regular dental care. And we've been saying for years that we need dental hygienists in mobile units, like we're talking now about doing here in Toronto, is having them go and check people before it becomes a problem. So it's a preventative problem that needs to be looked after. And as you could just imagine, the infections that occur in people's mouths, they just lead to all other kinds of implications in terms of their overall health.
Yeah, and a cost also to the healthcare system if things get worse. The whole idea of preventative healthcare is, you know, it's not new, but this is certainly a step in that direction. It does come with a cost, though, $13 billion for the dental care program. And it's part of the deal, of course, the Liberal government struck with the NDP to stay in power. And some people say this is a political move as opposed to a people-centered move. And Lauren, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the politics of a dental care plan.
Well, there's an election eventually coming up for the federal government, for the federal Liberals. They were about 16 months away from that. This could have been the last pre-election budget, depending on when the actual election occurs. So this is an election goodie. will they ever actually have to deliver on it? Will they deliver on it within the next 16 months? Will they be phasing it in? All that stuff comes to mind. In some sense, it looks like another, what I would call an election goodie.
Yeah, Anthony, what's your, you look like you want to jump on that one.
It's a very expensive election goodie.
It is.
And an ongoing program. Just personally, not speaking on behalf of CARP, but I'm concerned more for those who can't afford dental care. And a program that provides universal dental care may be nice, but can we afford that? But I want to make sure that those who can't afford it have access, and that perhaps a lowering of the threshold for the those who are eligible for that care, for children, for lower-income families, and for seniors who don't have that readily available income to get the care they need. And that investment will keep them out of ERs and will keep them productive and not suffering.
So you raise a good point. Let me ask you this question about universality, because would the government be better perhaps to plug the holes to make sure, like you said, people who fall beneath a certain threshold will get it, but it not make it a universal program?
It's hard to have everything in life covered by the government. And that's, and maybe I'll point to Bill on this, but we're asking for the same for PharmaCare as well. Mm-hmm. There are many holes in the PharmaCare system right now where people can't afford their medications, but for the majority of people, they're covered under one plan or the other.
Yeah, Bill, what are your thoughts? I mean, the national program is just that. It is a national program. We actually know Alberta and Quebec have opted out. Some other provinces are saying they want to as well, or threatening to, because they say, well, we already have a system and it works, and don't tread on us. What do you say to that?
Well, Anthony makes a very good point. And CARP members, in addition to wanting to make sure those people who need it and can't afford it are covered, we're also very concerned about raising taxes and the extra cost of living that puts on to everyone. So no, the dental plan has all kinds of weaknesses, and to be insuring people with family incomes up to $90,000 and starting to subsidize them heavily at income of $70,000 a year is very high compared to anything else. We've always said that the regular low-income threshold where people are covered for public service, which is around $37,000 for a family in Ontario, is too low. But $70,000 is so high. There's got to be somewhere in the middle. And we were shocked when we saw that $70,000 to $90,000 a year threshold for income around this program. Now, they tried to get around that by saying if you already had a dental plan, you couldn't leave the one you're now paying for and go and move into the public plan. You had to stay in the plan you're with. But that created all kinds of problems too, because there were people who fell in the cracks there because they weren't able to afford with an income that last year, say a woman now widowed whose husband passed away. We know this is one of our members. They were in the $60,000 threshold last year, so that she would get the coverage. But they already had a plan. Now that he has died, she doesn't have that income, and she can't afford to make the payments on the old plan. And there's no way for her to move from that plan to the other. There's just so many holes and inconsistencies. And Anthony, you mentioned it could be the fall before the program is in place. We've heard as late as November before most people start getting coverage. And remember, this plan was announced last fall. It'll have been 12 months by then. And we know people are putting off dental care because they think it's going to be paid for. Can you imagine waiting an entire year for dental work that you need now? It's going to create huge problems.
And there are tens of thousands of seniors in Canada already over age 80 who have received their dental card. They're ready to go. They are customers registered with Sun Life, and they are ready to participate and waiting for that. And if it's going to be 9 or 10 months longer, they're going to be really put out by, perhaps as Lauren mentioned, at election time, if they're still not able to access the dental care that they were promised.
Yeah, the dental, the election is looming. It's a year and a bit out. A year, it's October of next year, but still a deadline that could be missed if the plan doesn't kick in until November, because apparently dentists are saying that they don't have the capacity to service all the needs that they expect. The threshold will be, as was pointed out, higher. So more people will be looking for services. And they've actually said some patients may have to wait 6 months or more for appointments. So, Lauren, I guess from a political, we'll get to the personal standpoint, but a political standpoint of this, is this program going to be a winner if people end up in the queue as opposed to getting services when they want them?
You know, I don't really think so. The Liberals got a quick hit through the announcement. That's what they wanted, I guess, to get that quick hit and this excitement in the announcement. And then they can say, oh, yeah, we're going to roll it out. That makes sense. But with all the details we're hearing now in this discussion, there could be some blowback now on them as the rollout proceeds or doesn't proceed over the next year, especially just before the election next year.
I understand. Before my time, though, but when the federal government rolled out a universal national health care plan, that doctors were not interested in participating and they were forced by legislation to participate. Could you see or do we foresee a time where the Liberal government would insist that dentists who want to practice in Canada have to be part of the plan?
They could certainly try. The pushback would be phenomenal and hard to believe that they could really get away with doing that. But as you say, it happened in the past and could be tried again. I can't believe that a Liberal or a Conservative government would even try to do that. An NDP government might attempt to, and that would be a very interesting thing to watch. But that would be years away before that might happen.
Yeah, the NDP is some people say actually doing a lot of the policy of this government currently, but we'll see how long that lasts. We're talking, of course, to our Zoomer squad, Lauren Bozeniff, Bill Van Gorder, and in studio with me, Anthony Quinn. If you at home have any comments on the current dental plan, the plans the government has for the dental plan, the announcement today in Toronto for mobile services to long-term care homes, give us a call at 416-360-0740 or toll-free 1-866-740-4740 and let us know your thoughts. Do you have any questions also or concerns about what the government is planning? We were talking earlier to our guests about the cost of the program and the threshold that there is now for participation. But apparently one thing I read that I'm curious, maybe someone can clear this up for me, is that seniors who have no income will not be eligible. I don't know if you've heard this, but...
Yeah, it's based on filing your income tax. and many seniors who aren't who only get their government income, the very low income seniors, and other people don't bother to file income tax returns because they don't think they have to because they have no real income, so they're not listed, not a part of the program, so they're not on that Sun Life list. They're not getting the cards in the mail, and they won't be eligible until somebody registers them. So, you know, the message from the government has been loud and clear about to file your income tax, whether or not you have income. The problem is most of those advertisements have been in social media, and the seniors we're talking about don't go to social media for their news.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Anthony, is this an example of another way the government hasn't thought this through? Because the target groups for the service, seniors is a big one, are not necessarily being reached by the communications they're putting out.
We had the seniors minister here in our building 2 months ago, 3 months ago now, for our annual general meeting. And he talked about rolling out a national program and what a large and Herculean effort it would be. So I give them some slack on rolling out a national program, and certainly hurdles and potholes on the way, but to maybe race to roll it out could have been one of the issues because they want to do it during to meet election deadlines. But I think certainly matching the need with the service is the important part, and not trying to be everything to everybody.
Yeah, clearly not. And this is the issue that we've come up with a few other things the government has done in terms of getting ahead of themselves, getting ahead of their skis, as one would say, try and get people's attention and try and get their votes, I guess, eventually. And we have a caller on the line here, Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
You've got a question for our Zoomer squad today about the dental services. What is it?
I just want to let you know that my dentist doesn't know whether they're going to opt in until June. I called Sun Life. They gave me three dentists in my neighborhood, and all three of them have said that they don't know. Call back later in the summer.
And how does that make you feel when you hear that?
It makes me feel the same way I feel about our government not knowing what the right hand is doing from the left hand.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know what the hands are doing either sometimes, but thank you for the call. I'm going to ask our Zoomers here to react. I'll start with you, Lauren. You know, Jane's question here, if people start getting anxious about this program, is it going to rebound on the government and have the opposite effect that it was intended to?
You know what, there's always the issue of the basic competence of the government. Can they actually deliver the programs? And these recent announcements and then all the questions about them and programs like this where there are so many questions are going to reflect negatively on the government unless they can get their act together. Public expects them to have their act together. They don't expect to have all these questions, and no one seems to know anything. The dentists don't seem to know until June, et cetera, et cetera. This should all have been sorted out before they made any announcements.
All right. Anthony, what are you hearing on the ground? We just heard from Jane. Is this a sort of familiar refrain that you're hearing from our members at CARP?
It certainly is the refrain. The expectation and the promise was that a card would be delivered and you would be able to go to a dentist of your choice. And that's the secret to any dental care program, is that you don't have to travel miles. There won't be a bottleneck at the source of delivery where only one or two dentists in the neighborhood are providing it, and that the reimbursement process would be easy. So we're at a point now where someone like Jane is calling her preferred dentist and they're saying, no, I don't think so. And then they call Sun Life and they get referred to a dentist and still, no, I don't think so. So it's a big issue, and I don't see it being resolved anytime soon.
Yeah, Bill, and I'm wondering if the government's made a bit of a mistake, similar to what they did with the doctors when they announced the capital gains tax changes in the recent budget, which disproportionately affected professionals like doctors who will realize capital gains usually when they sell their practice. They have a very strong advocacy group. They're making a lot of noise. And dentists as well have advocacy groups. And, you know, CARP is an advocacy group. So when you upset people who have representation, is there a risk there that when things go wrong, you'll get a lot of angry voices joining the chorus?
You will, and you know, both those are two good instances of really bad fumble of not pre-planning and not speaking. We know that, you know, back in the fall when they announced this program, they hadn't even begun to negotiate with the National Dental Association, let alone with the provincial dental associations and the provinces themselves. And what they did, you'll recall, is roll out a program that they already had in place for indigenous communities, for the RCMP, other groups that they covered, and they tried to just take that one and make it and turn it into a national program. But right off the bat, it had rates that were 15% lower than were already approved by governments for dentists across the country, and they made the assumption that dentists would all want to see these people covered, so they'd be happy to take 15% less money, even though it created more paperwork and more staff time for them. So, and whether or not, you know, whether or not you agree with those issues as being key for dentists, they should have been negotiated before the government even began to announce that there was going to be a program to the rest of the country. So, horrible fumble. The same with, you know, the capital gains tax that the doctors have been complaining about. It's not just the doctors. I've had a number of self-employed entrepreneurial seniors who barely have enough money now to get along. Their investments are in things that will create a capital gain when they have to cash them in to have the money to live on. That's been their entire retirement fund. One of the things that government always forgets, especially the public servants, is that only 30% of Canadians have a defined pension plan. The rest of the people have their own savings, and many people have no pension plan at all. People like myself, I've worked for charities all my life. I don't have a pension plan. I only have my own savings. So anything that I have invested could also be taken. So it's not just the doctors that they're really upsetting with that move that I think they thought was, well, we're only taking it for the rich people. Well, they aren't. It's hitting a lot of people who are really going to be upset by it.
I would love to chew on those issues more with everyone here, but unfortunately we're out of time for this segment. I want to thank Lauren Bozanoff, Bill Van Gorder, and Anthony Quinn, our Zoomer squad, for today. And when we come back, we will be switching up and talking about another rite of spring, fixing potholes. Stay with us on Fight Back.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Tasha Kiridan.
Welcome back. Well, it's not just the sakura trees. Yes, that's how it's actually pronounced in Japanese. Sakura, not sakura. I know. I was in Japan for a couple of weeks, so I'm being picky about it. But the cherry trees, the sakura trees are blooming in Toronto. And guess what else is? The potholes are too. The city just launched its third pothole blitz of the year this past weekend. Around 133 workers forming 36 crews were on repair patrol and paid particular attention to King Street Transit Priority Corridor, Scarborough North, Etobicoke North, and the northwest area of North York. Now, the city says it has fixed 100,000, count them, potholes since the beginning of 2024, partly giving credit to the milder winter. And city councillors have allocated $5 million for a comprehensive pothole repair program from this year's federal budget. So Ottawa is paying to fill our potholes. Good to know. Meanwhile, the Canadian Automobile Association, CAA, conducted its annual Worst Roads campaign for Ontario, where drivers, cyclists, transit riders, and pedestrians can vote for the worst road in the province. And last year's second place spot went to Eglinton Avenue West. This year's results are yet to be announced, but if you have a worst road or pothole that you particularly hate, call us. Call us now and tell us about it. 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. 4740. What pothole, what road really makes you mad? And maybe the city will hear you and fix it. So now joining us to dig deep into the pothole issue, our Assistant Vice President and Community and Government and Community Relations for CAA SCO, Teresa DeFelice, and Barbara Gray, General Manager of Transportation Services. Welcome to you both.
Hi. Thank you. Your phones are going to light up.
Well, I'm waiting for it because there are a lot of potholes out there. And, Teresa, I'm going to start with you on this one. How do your members rate this year's crop of potholes, better or worse than last year?
Well, you know, we do two things. We had the worst road survey that just closed up, and as you said, the results will be coming in a few weeks. But we also do a survey of our members every January leading up to our campaign. And, you know, potholes are a big pain point. We did have a milder winter, so a little bit better than last year, but they are by far the reason why people take to the campaign the most and the pain point the most. Is the number of potholes and how and the sort of degradation of the roadway perception that it provides that it's not being maintained.
Yeah, Barbara, what do you hear from the crews who are out there too and what they're seeing on the roads, better or worse?
I think it's actually, I think, a little bit better this year for us. You know, the team really likes to get out there and get the work done, and because we had a mild winter, and because we're also sharing some staff now with Parks, Forestry, and Recreation, where we have some additional staff to help with sidewalk snow clearing in the winter, and they take them in the summertime. So we were able to utilize about another couple hundred staff to help with the first two blitzes of the year, and that made a really big difference. So I think the teams on the ground are happy about that. We're about halfway to, at this point of the year in April, we filled 200,000 potholes last year, which was a record, I think, that we've done in recent times. And we're almost to 100,000 now. So I'm feeling like we're strong at getting there, and hopefully we'll continue to pick up the pace.
So describe to me the pothole blitz. You know, I have this vision of the squads all rushing out there, get the potholes done, digging furiously. What's it actually like to do a weekend pothole blitz?
Yeah, well, we get a whole bunch of staff. Normally, we have about 30 crews, I believe, who are out every day just filling potholes. I'm sure that lots of people see them out there, but they work every day to get potholes filled. But on the weekends, we try to concentrate the efforts, and people come out and they go to various parts of the city. They usually do a balance of looking at where people have called in service requests, where they have our maintenance patrol teams that are out during the week have identified locations to go back to. And this blitz in particular, we focused on neighborhoods, and you mentioned them, Scarborough North, Etobicoke North, some of the northwest parts of North York, where we tend to have a fair number of equity-deserving communities, maybe folks who aren't necessarily going to pick up the phone and call 311. They're quite busy, maybe with a couple jobs, new immigrant communities. And so we focused our efforts in those communities this weekend. And I'll tell you, just as many potholes, even though not as many service requests. So I think there's always going to be lots of work to do. But I think it's really important for us to be making sure that we're spreading that work throughout the city.
And it is. And if you have a pothole that you particularly, it bothers you, give us a call. Phone in. The city is on the line. They're listening here. 416-360-0740 or toll free 1-866-740-4740. Share your pothole story with us. Teresa, I'm going to ask you now a technical question. How does a pothole form?
Well, there's a couple of different things, but I think, you know, when it comes to weather and when we have freeze and thaw conditions, right? So, I mean, pavement has a lifespan, just like the shingles on your roof. And so some of it could just be wear and tear. The busier, major arterial roads, I think Barbara could probably answer this question better, but, you know, we have big trucks and lots of volume of, traffic. And so, you know, certain spots, air pockets, water gets in, freezes, thaws, and creates this crumbling, or it can get bigger. And sometimes there's just cracks and fissures in the road. And so, you know, this is, I think what we tend to see is once the pavement starts, if there's been freeze, thaw conditions in particular, it can really make that small pothole into a pretty big one. And we have stats too around sort of people are swerving to avoid potholes, so there's a safety issue. And I think, you know, that's why potholes needs to be such an important focus, because A, it just helps the overall look and you know, traveling of the road. But B, you know, there is damage that can happen to people's vehicles. And we had 42% of our respondents, 47% in Toronto, actually, had suffered, got damage to their vehicle, and on average are spending $852 out of pocket to fix.
I was going to ask you what the cost is, because there's a cost to fixing them. And there's a cost, obviously, of not fixing them, which is usually borne by the driver. That $852, is that usually covered by insurance, or can you get it back from the city? What do people do?
Well, only about 1% of our respondents said that they had filed a claim. And I think, you know, sometimes that's because they don't know that there is a way to file a claim. Sometimes that could be people who have heard others who file a claim. Once upon a time, I worked at the city, so I know when it comes to filing a claim, part of it is liability. And if they didn't know there was a pothole in a particular spot, then, you know, their liability isn't there. But that's sometimes too where you see a cone or something has been erected to sort of alert until that pothole crew can get out there because they've identified a problem.
Yeah, and let me ask you, Barbara, we're talking before about dentistry and preventive maintenance, preventive dentistry to avoid bigger problems. Are there any ways to do preventive maintenance when it comes to potholes? I mean, apart from filling them when they start, is there any type of pavement that's more resistant? Has the city looked at ways to avoid the creation of these potholes?
Yeah, absolutely. I just first want to compliment Teresa on her definition of how a pothole forms, because I thought that was textbook. So she should get some kudos for that. I mean, effectively, being on top of our state of good repair for roads is the best way to avoid having roads with potholes. And while, as you can see around the city, there's a whole bunch of road construction going on, which also people don't really care for, the roads are in a state where, you know, many of them are over 50 years old, and they do need to be repaired. So we continue to repair the roads and certainly looking at durable paving materials and durable methods of repairing the roads is something we are always taking on and implementing. But really, getting those roads repaired, potholes filling is a temporary measure. It's not intended to be a permanent measure. And we will be adding some new equipment to our equipment this next year in 2025, what's called the Patch Master, which is going to help us to do more durable road repairs, not sort of the whole road, but certainly portions of lanes, things that I think will really make a huge difference. And those repairs are much more durable and they'll last longer. So we're going to have much more capacity to do that with our in-house crews. And so, for example, on a winter like this one, where it was warmer for more months of the year, we would have been able to be out there doing more of those repairs. So that's going to be new for 2025.
Okay, and where do people call to report potholes to get them fixed and get some action from you, Barbara?
I think the easiest thing to do is to call 311. But know that our patrollers are also out on the roads 5 days a week, and they do record potholes. We are also in the process of looking at some technology that can help us to find those early and get to them faster, because I think that's a really important piece. And Mayor Chow is very, very aligned on this. Her Back on Track program, she was there in Scarborough. She's excellent at filling potholes. We've had her out twice now to do, or three times actually, to do some pothole filling. And so she's very, very focused on that state of good
repair. Did she fill them herself? Did she get a hard hat and shovel? I'm visualizing.
She sure did.
Wow.
Go check social media. She's excellent.
That's a great photo. That's a photo op for the ages right there. Okay, Teresa, I'm going to wrap with you. I'm going to ask you about the worst roads, because that contest is every year. When will we get the announcement of this year's, I guess, losers, not really winners?
Yeah, it's coming up later in May, in the fourth week of May, so near right at the end. Right now, we've got our partners in the Residential Civil and Construction Alliance and the Toronto Area Road Builders who are helping us evaluate the nominations, giving us a bit of a technical analysis, because they have the expertise. These are the people who fill the potholes and fix the roads. And so we're just getting all that ready so that we can provide a comprehensive result when we announce our final 10 and our regional top five.
Can't wait. Okay, we'll have to have you on again to give us the bad apples here. Want to thank you so much, Teresa DeFelice for CAA and Barbara Gray, Manager of Transportation Services for the City of Toronto. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks. You as well.
All right. And coming up after the break, a road issue of a different sort. Pro-Palestinian protests snarled traffic in Ottawa this weekend, and the hateful language that was used has some people calling for charges. We're going to talk to commentator and author Warren Kinsella after the break.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Tasha Kiridan.
Welcome back. Pleased to be sitting in for Libby today and tomorrow. And we're going to end our show here with a topic that, it's far less cheerful than the last two that we were chewing on, dental care and potholes. We could make light of those, but there's nothing funny about this one. Pro-Palestinian protests have been a fact of life here in this city and in other cities across the world, really, Canada too, obviously. But this weekend, one in downtown Ottawa was seen to really cross the line. It included chants openly glorifying Hamas attack of October 7th. And while the Prime Minister condemned these actions on X, formerly Twitter, many Canadians are saying our politicians need to do more to tackle the rising tide of hate as the Israel-Hamas war enters its seventh month. And similarly, in the United States, Columbia University President Manoush Shafiq announced all classes at that university will be held virtually today as we head into the first day of Passover. University campus has become ground zero for some of the angriest protests in the United States, and many anti-Semitic sentiments surfaced since the October 7th terror attack, and the situation got so bad in recent days. A rabbi linked to the Ivy League school urged Jewish students to stay home. Okay, we'd like your thoughts on these protests and how officials in government and academia are handling them, or not handling them, in your view. Give us a call, 416-360-0740, or toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Joining us now to talk about these issues is someone who knows them very well. Warren Kinsella is many things, including an author many years ago of a book called Web of Hate about hate movements around the world and in Canada. He's a former special assistant to Jean Chrétien. He's the CEO of Daisy Group, and he's on the phone with us now. Hi, Warren. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks, my friend.
So paint us a picture here of this protest on the weekend first. What exactly went down?
Well, it was terrible. And it happened right on Wellington Street, you know, just feet from the office of the Prime Minister of Canada. And so these people, many of them masked, marched down Wellington Street and yelled, this is a quote, October 7 is proof that we are almost free. So they're talking about the slaughter of 1,200 men, women, children, and babies. And then they went on to say, this is another quote, long live October 7th. Long live the resistance. And, you know, the problem with that, along with the obvious fact that these groups, these anti-Israel, pro-Hamas groups are getting much more aggressive and much more out there, is to say things like that is considered a crime in this country. Like, you're not allowed to lend support to a listed terrorist entity in the way that Hamas is. You're not allowed to, you know, as you pointed out about the synagogue in Toronto on the weekend, that's targeting, that's willfully promoting hatred against an identifiable group, which in this case is Jews. Like, we've got the laws on the book, Tasha, as you and I know. What we seem to lack in this country is the leadership, you know, with our politicians, our police, and our prosecutors to take action against what is becoming a much more extreme movement.
Now, you wrote a piece, because you're also an author, you write for Post Media, and you had an article in the Toronto Sun, in which case, I'm going to quote from it, because maybe our listeners will also wonder who said this. You said Prime Minister Trudeau, a Liberal Prime Minister, decided to act after months of kind of extremism that you just described, firebombing mailboxes and public buildings, attacking banks, the kinds of things that are analogous to what's going on now. And that, Trudeau said, the government's pledged it will introduce legislation which deals not only with the symptoms but with the social causes which often underlie or serve as an excuse for crime and disorder. Now, which Trudeau said that?
Yeah, we wish it was the current one. We wish it was the current occupant of 24 Sussex and the Langevin Block, but it's not. It's the father. It's Pierre Trudeau when he was grappling and his government was grappling with an increasingly violent and extreme separatist movement in the form of the FLQ. That's what he said. And then he went on to impose the War Measures Act and took all kinds of other steps to stamp out the FLQ and to basically crush that movement, which he successfully did. And his son, meanwhile, has just issued, I think, a couple tweets in the past few months, but he's done precious little else to fight what is a growing and increasingly criminal problem in this country.
Now, we know that Father Trudeau, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, was criticized for going too far. There were a lot of arrests, a lot of people held without charge, without trial for a number of days, months. And there was a lot of criticism about how things were handled. On the other hand, he decided to act. The response today is very different, as you pointed out. How do you explain the difference between the two? And how would you strike a balance, I guess, between freedom of expression and freedom from hate?
Well, you know, Trudeau has made use of the successor of the War Measures Act, Justin Trudeau has, which is now called the Emergency Measures Act. And it's been found by a judicial inquiry that he used it appropriately. So he's got the tools. He knows how to use them. He used them in that case against the so-called convoy people in Ottawa. But, you know, those people, I opposed the occupation of Ottawa. I thought that what they were doing was wrong. But what's happening now with these anti-Semitic and pro-Hamas groups is far worse, right? We've seen schools, day schools of Jewish kids being shot up in Montreal, not once, but twice. We've seen the firebombing of synagogues and community centers and Jewish delicatessens from Quebec to Ontario. We've seen private residences in Winnipeg of Jewish families being shot up. Like we've got a big problem that has now reached kind of an FLQ level. But what we lack is, you know, somebody who's got the determination, like Pierre Trudeau did, to stamp it out and deal with it. And it's extraordinary. We're talking about his son. Of all people, you'd expect to remember and know what his father did. And by the way, that it earned him the support of 90% of Canadians, what Pierre Trudeau did. Gallup did a poll at the time. Like, why isn't Trudeau, the son, doing what Trudeau, the elder, did? And it makes no sense because the problem's getting worse.
Okay, I have on the line with us a very familiar voice here, of course, at Zoomer, Sam Houston, who's co-host of the Morning Zoom with Sam and Jane. And your son, Sam, also goes to Columbia University that I was mentioning in our intro, where protests have also gone off the charts. What do you want to share?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that I actually had no idea this was going on at Columbia. It started last Thursday, Tash, and I just heard from my son Ford maybe 10 minutes ago, and he said the police presence on campus is very unsettling, and, you know, he used the word weird. It is primarily a pro-Palestinian march and protest that's been going on really on and off, but it kind of torqued up again this morning, and so all of his classes are virtual today, which, you know, as it's the end of the second year for him. He graduates in a few weeks, and there are lots of Canadians on campus who are feeling very more than uncomfortable and slightly threatened by what's going on at an institution where you're there to learn, and, you know, it's been interrupted, and he's not happy about it, say the least.
Well, I can imagine, Warren, it's not just politicians who are reacting and dealing with issues. Academics and heads of academic institutions are as well. How do you explain their response to the kind of situations that we're seeing?
Well, if you look at the polling that Leger and many others have done, one of the biggest problems we've had since the morning of October the 8th, since immediately after the terrible attacks that took place in Israel on the 7th, is among millennials, you know, between the ages of about 18 and 24. Rather, Gen Z is 18 to 24, and millennials, which is about 25 to about 40. Those two groups, in some cases, Tasha, you know, are supportive of what Hamas did. They are willing to consider attacks on Jewish citizens and Jewish businesses. Like, we've got a big problem, and it's not just in Canada. This is in the United States and Western Europe as well, where you see, if you look at these protests on your TV screen or your computer screen every night, you'll see basically the demographic where we've got the biggest problem is with younger Canadians, younger Americans. The vast majority of people who are older, my age, are on side with Israel. They believe that Israel has a right to exist, you know, within safe and secure borders and has a right to defend itself. But among millennials and Gen Z, we've got a big problem.
And why do you think that is? And how do we combat that? Because obviously, you know, all of us will be gone someday. We don't like to think about it. We won't be around. How do we make sure that young people get the full picture of what actually happened in history and why Israel exists, for example?
Well, it shows the critical importance of education, right? And if they are at, and you've written extensively on this from the National Post and others, if we allow curriculums to get away from us, we'll allow curriculums to become radicalized, whether it's at the high school level or the post-secondary level, that's where we start to lose young people. In addition, the institutions that young people look up to or participate in, like NGOs or, you know, public trade unions or within academia, of course, obviously, we need to ensure that there's leadership there who believes in tolerance and decency and opposes anti-Semitism. You know, that, but like, be under no illusion. The problem we've got involves millions of Gen Z and millennials across Western democracy. And it's going to take a considerable amount of time to fix it because it's taken a considerable amount of time for the problem to grow.
All right, Warren Kinsella, I want to thank you so much. If you want to read more of what Warren has to say on this issue, because he writes about it a lot as well, you can open any copy of the Toronto Sun. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today. That is it for me today. I will be back in the chair tomorrow. But time now for the news with Bob Komsic.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.